discuss a little halacha and hashkafa. I will try to avoid both of those topics and focus more for those who were at my self-deprecating song last night about chakiros and lamdas. So I would like to discuss some of the analysis of some of the very principal and fundamental aspects of the mitzvah of the four cups of wine, the mitzvah of Arba Kosos. There really is much to say about this topic. It's a very big topic. But I wanted to pick two of the central discussions that Rishonim have about the essence of what we do when it comes to Arba Kosos. And really, the two fundamental issues really will revolve around three halachic questions for you to keep in mind as we begin the shiur. One is the fact that, as some of you may know, and we will see this inside momentarily, the four cups are among the unique mitzvos we have, and that shortage of funds are not an excuse. If one does not have enough money to buy a pair of tefillin, to be able to afford Shabbos candles, or anything like that, one does not have to go broke in order to fulfill Paz Mitzvah. They have to use up a certain amount of their capital, but if they really don't have enough money, so there are all sorts of things that are beyond a person's control. And if you're laid up in a hospital bed, you can't go to shul, that's an excuse, that's a legitimate excuse. If you don't have enough money, that is considered a legitimate excuse. You're exempt. One of the only examples, in fact, the only example mentioned in the Mishnah about all the mitzvahs in the Torah, and this is, interestingly enough, maybe even ironic, the mitzvah of the Dalet Kosos, to drink the four cups of wine, is actually not from the Torah. The mitzvah of the four cups is a rabbinic enactment. And it, of all mitzvahs, the Mishnah tells us, poverty is no excuse. One literally has to spend, even if it was their last dime, to fulfill the mitzvah. And there is a communal responsibility. Our Gabbai Tzedakah just came. So it is a responsibility on the Gabbai Tzedakah to make sure that a person who really has no funds is given money in order to be able to fulfill the mitzvah of Arba Kosos. Very important halacha. Of course, the question is why? Why such an extreme stress? And here, very practical for our Gabbai, is if you have limited funds and you're already collecting from the community, for example, so how much you have to give? All right, if there's a family of 10, so does the community have to pay for everyone to have four cups? It's a much greater amount of money. Perhaps only the head of the house. How do you understand this halacha? Another question which will be connected to this is a question of how much does one have to drink? Right? When you get to the second, the third, and the fourth cup, this is a very lamaisa, happens to be, right? This is most poskim hold. You can drink grape juice for all four cups. You should keep that in mind if the wine is difficult for you. But nevertheless, by the third or fourth cup, even grape juice is starting to get a little difficult on this palate. So how much do you have to drink? And a final question I want to deal with relates to the fact that, as you're all familiar, one of the four cups is one of the examples that we have throughout the Seder night where there is a mitzvah to lean. And the question is, which cups specifically do we lean at? And why. And that will be our mission, if you should choose to accept it with me. The Mishnah, in the beginning of the 10th parak of Maseches Pesachim, this is the top source on your sheet, tells us the following. Erev Pesachim, Samuch Lemincha, and Erev Pesach, in the afternoon, Lo Yochel Adam HaShetichshach, you're not supposed to eat anymore, so that you'll have a full stomach, you'll be hungry when it comes to the Seder. Afilu Ani Shebi Yisrael, even someone who is in dire straits and very poor, lo yochal achi yesev. Nevertheless, despite, here there are more sheets up front, anyone who, even though a person, you can imagine, Pesach is expensive, someone is short of funds, they may not be feeling so first class, if they could just get by. So nevertheless, says the Mishnah, despite that fact, they are supposed to act with the same dignity and luxury and royalty of even a king or a queen, and they too have to lean, despite the fact that they have such dire circumstances. And moreover, the halacha we mentioned before, lo yifchasu lo me'arba kosel shel yayin ba'afilu min hatamchoi. Even from the shul collection, even from the community gabbai tzedakah, you can't say, here's enough, here's a little matzah, that's a Torah obligation. Here's a little bit, make kiddush. No! We are responsible, if they can't do it themselves, as a community, to provide for somebody who can't for themselves, up to 4 cups. That is the extraordinary ruling in the Mishnah. So immediately, on the spot, commenting with a very sensitive and keen eye to the language of the Mishnah, comes the Tosfos. And they draw the following inference. This is the second source on your sheet. Mitoch haloshon, mash meksas, she'ein nosnin levanov ulevnei veso, ki'im la'atzmo, hu motzias kulam b'shelo. Sensitive to the language of the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, lo yifchasu lo, right? That the tzedakah should not do any less for him. Says Tosfos, it appears that if somebody is collecting community funds, and again, it would be true for extension, for example, if they are literally so impoverished that they have to, so to speak, sell the shirt off their back, so to speak, to get some extra funds. So how much do they have to collect? Says Tosfos, it appears only sufficient for the head of the house to have the 4 cups of wine. What's going to be? Right, why do you think he's so poor? He has 10 kids. He has a whole family around him. What are they going to do? They have a mitzvah for Dalad Kosos. It applies to women and to men. So they will listen. And when he makes the bracha, they will have in mind to be yotzei through him. After all, says Tosos, is the underlying part. Visvaruhu. This isn't so radical. Demaishna arba kosos mi kiddush techol hashana sh'echad motzi es kulam. In homes across Baltimore and this country and this world, every Shabbos this happens. How many people make kiddush? Usually only one. And the truth is that many families have a minhag where they pass around a little grape juice or wine to everyone. But the halacha is that in fact that's not required. If somebody hears kiddush on a Friday night and has in mind to fulfill that obligation, they in fact fulfill that obligation with or without any drinking. Happens to be there's a minority opinion, it's actually of the Briskerov, who we'll see more of soon, who held that that's not true Shabbos morning. That ironically enough, even though Shabbos morning the kiddush is only rabbinic and it's a Torah obligation at night, ironically enough, he held that Shabbos morning everyone does have to have a taste. So sometimes if you ever find yourself at a home where you see that they're very machmir, that everyone should drink, so perhaps they're briskers. But the truth is that even many more liberal briskers don't take that chumrah. That's a real chumrah. Most people assume, just like Friday night, you don't have to drink as long as one person drinks. Someone has to drink. Can't leave that poor cup of wine, nothing happening. Someone has to drink. But not everyone else around the table. Says Tosfos, that's all I'm saying here. You see from the Mishnah, why should it be any different? Kiddush all year round, kiddush and the other 3 cups at the Seder night. It would appear, however, that this position of Tosfos, which again he says, Visvaruhu, it's not so radical. It happens every Shabbos. It would appear that that is not entirely accepted. And it would appear, one could suggest, that the Rambam rejects this leniency, and we'll call it a leniency, that only one person has to drink. If you look at the third source, I have the Rambam in Hilchos Chametz HaMatzah in the 7th parak, the 7th halacha. And he says, as we have it underlined here, we call Echad ve'Echad, Bein Anoshim, Bein Noshim, everyone at the table, men and women, Chayiv Lishtos, Balayla Hazeh Arba Kosos Shel Yayin. The Rambam says that everyone has to drink 4 cups. According to Tosfos, that's not true. According to Tosfos, as long as one person drinks, he can be motzi, and for argument's sake, she could be motzi, perhaps one could say, everyone else at the table. The Rambam seems to go out of his way, it's not really necessary to be that specific, but he is, that everyone, not just is obligated in 4 cups, the way we might say it, are you obligated in arba kosos? The Rambam doesn't say it. The Rambam says you're obligated to drink dalet kosos, and he says that about everyone. So you have to give more money to the Gabbai Tzedakah before Pesach, because he's going to have more money to give out. Because when people come to him and say, I don't have enough, he's not going to be able to say, well, one bottle of wine, you'll divide it up, that'll be your 4 cups. He'll have to have 10 bottles of wine if there's 10 people in the house. Much more demanding. That's one debate. Hold off on that. What seems to be very fascinating, and perhaps not coincidental, is that there is another debate between these exact two protagonists. between Tosfos on the one hand and the Rambam on the others. What's the second debate? Second issue I mentioned in my introduction. How much wine or grape juice, be it as it may, do you have to drink? It's never explicit, at least in any clear way, in the Gemara. And whenever anything is unclear in a Gemara, so that often leads to debate in the commentaries on the Gemara. So sure enough, in two different sources, not that far apart, Tosfos first on Daf Kuf Zayin, page 107, and then subsequently, page and a half later, 108b, two different times, Tosfos addresses this question. And he deals with two different enigmatic Gemaras, and in fact, what essentially Tosfos is pointing out is that on the surface, these Gemaras seem to go against each other. And Tosfos has a way of reading the Gemaras that shows that it's not a conflict, but rather he synthesizes the two Gemaras to actually give one harmonious approach. And what is that? If you look at the fourth source, is the first Tosfos, he mentions a famous Gemara in Maseches Yoma, that there is something called Malo Lugmav. Who knows what Malo Lugmav means? Exactly. Very good. It means a cheekful, right? Right. My daughter likes to play this game with me. I go like this. And she goes like that. So that is important. She's a halachic woman. She intuits halacha even at the age of 7. That is the shear of Malo Lugmav. Essentially a cheekful. Says Tosfos, in this case, how much is that? So he says on the top line, v'have pachos me'revius. Because it's not exactly what we call a revius. A revius, I just mentioned this Friday night in shul. That's a classical measurement used in the Gemara. How does that convert into modern measurements? So there's a debate of opinions. The opinions of contemporary poskim range, more or less, anywhere from a little over 3 ounces to about 5.5 ounces. And we'll assume the middle position, say Rav Moshe Feinstein holds, it's a little, for Daraisas, a little over 4 ounces, which is actually not that much. A little over 4 ounces. It's actually a lot smaller than you might think if you think about the size of a cup. Wait, we made Pesach last year for the first time as a family, so we had to go out and buy Pesach everything. Including, so my wife said, what kind of cups do I have to buy for Dalakosis? And I imagine that the cups would be much bigger. But you figure out how much a revius is, and the cups are not that big. You can have a much bigger cup. We'll get to that in a second. But the minimum amount, even for the first cup, which is Kiddush, so that has an added dimension, is still not that big. Even, again, unless you, even if you had the Chazon Ish, well, over 5 ounces is not so huge, but certainly the smaller amounts are not. Says Tosfos, he continues. Second line. Avno lugma va'rinan hasam dehavi yosa mirevius. So what, back and forth, what's the amount? Is it this official amount, we'll call that a few ounces, or does it depend? It's not a measurement that you can look up in a book. It's my cheekful. Everyone knows how much a cheekful is. You drink and when you feel your mouth filling up, you know you did a cheekful. So says Tosfos, the underlying part, v'nira shehu rov revius darmina lekaman. There's a Gemara later on that refers to this as the majority, 51% of the revius, right? So if you assume it's 4 ounces, that's 2.1 ounces is a majority of the revius. V'hu d'shasa ruba d'kasa v'davka l'adam beinoni. He says, what does this mean? He put it all together. He says, when the Gemara says that you have to have a cheekful, the Gemara was estimating that for the average-sized person, a cheekful actually computes to a little bit more than half of this standard measurement called the revius. But the real measurement for the Dalet Koso, says Tosfos, is the cheekful. It works out that that is the majority of a revius. You can use that as a reference. But it really is a cheekful, which is why the Tosfos concludes, right, this is, right? Avala Og Melech HaBashan, right? We had this fantastic biblical character of Og, who legend has it was this humongous person. I don't know exactly how big was he supposed to be, I'm not sure. He was a giant. So how big was his cheek? Right? Sometimes people think that I have a big mouth. But it wasn't as big as Oak's. Right? Big cheekful. Says Tosfos that he would have to drink a lot more. Maybe one cheekful for him was 10 ounces. So then that's what he has to drink. The Gemara says a revius. That is, again, an assumption that a standard-sized person that's going to be how much it is. But really, really, it's very subjective, person by person, man, woman, etc., the cheekful. That's what Tosafot says. Again, just to be clarified, the cup has to hold the standard amount, the revius. But you don't have to drink the whole cup. Says Tosafot, you know how much you have to drink? The cheekful. You don't even have to finish the cup. It's already, the Seder's already looking better for some of us. Right? Okay. So there's another Tosafot right below. He says the same thing. Ideally, you should do the whole cup, you should do the whole revius, but bare minimum, just the cheekful is sufficient, assuming that your cheekful is the majority of a revius. And again, we'll assume that that means a little over 2 ounces. Once again...
Why does it have... I mean, if it's... Which is the driver here? Is it the cheek or is it the revius?
I think it's the cheek, according to Tosafot.
So, I mean, so if it's a small mouth person, why...
Why?
They have to have a rope revius? Or is it just Malik Lukma?
Again, that might depend on which shita you hold like. I think there will be some shitas who would say no. As long as you have. Again, I don't think. L'chalchila, of course you should drink more. But we're talking about, you know, everyone drinks, right? Almost everyone I know drinks the whole first cup. We're all tough, right? I was in a shul where right before Ne'ilah, the rabbi got up and said, Ne'ilah is what separates the men from the boys. Right, so we could just paraphrase that for Pesach, right? The third or the fourth cup, you're still guzzling it, that's already someone who's really stark. So the question is, when you're already nauseous and half asleep and on a full stomach in the third or the fourth cup, you've had enough sugar for the last of your lifetime, so how much do you have to drink?
According to Tosafot, a midget can drink less.
Well, it would appear, perhaps. There's advantages. Okay? But we don't necessarily pass in lactosis. Again, the cup has to have more. The question is, how much do you have to drink? Says the Rambam, once again, it's the Rambam of all people. And Hilchos Chametz Matzavah, just two paragraphs later, Perek Zayin Halachotes, giving you all the details. Each cup has to have minimal a revius, he tells us. And then he tells us, if you look at the last part, the last 7-8 words, I have it underlined. The imshasa mikol kos mehen rubo yatsa. The Rambam says that it doesn't depend on the size of your cheek. It depends on the size of your cup. Right? Very often, right? I had the misfortune a few years of spending Pesach in a hotel for the Sedarim. It's not a misfortune, I have to be honest with you. It's not a misfortune the rest of the week. It's a pleasure. But the Sedarim are not the most pleasurable in any hotel. It's just the noise and everything. But one of the problems with the Pesach Seder is that they give you the same cups that you're going to drink with your soda during the meal. They're humongous. unless you bring your own cups, which they don't allow you to do, that's all they put out at the table. Again, maybe if I had gone to a fancier hotel, it would have given me a wine glass or something. But this is it's like a big cup. Or even a regular wine glass is pretty big. Says the Rambam, that's a chumrah. I remember it from those years. The Rambam says it's not enough to just have the cheekful. No matter if the cup is big, right? Kosher L'Eliyahu is a huge cup. You have to drink at least most of that cup. By then, you are for sure going to be more than your cheekful, and perhaps it's even more than this majority of a revius. Again, the cup bare minimum has to be a revius. So if you have a cup that's exactly the 4 point whatever ounces, and you drink exactly 50.1%, so then it could be that the Rambam and Tosafot work out with no practical difference. But the likelihood is that there is going to be a major practical difference. According to Tosafot, you have to have just this bare minimum. And according to the Rambam, it's all going to depend. And if you have a bigger cup, you will have to drink much more. So it would appear from the Rambam. So maybe you'll tell me, well, that's not really what the Rambam meant. So they point out that there is a good way to check this Rambam. Tosfos keyed us to an important thing earlier. Tosfos had said, I'm telling you about Hilchos Pesach and the four cups, and after all, it's no different. It should be just like Kiddush. So here, and very often this is an important skill to have in mind, if you're unsure about if you're reading too much into a text, and that's an important thing. Again, I am always... You know, I used to have a very big debate with one of my chavrusas, because if there was, he always wanted to have the more simple pshat, And I, if there was any chance, I was looking for the fancier razzle-dazzle shot. I used to say, in life, we don't want machlokes, but in Torah, we always love machlokes. I used to joke about myself, I'm marbe machlokes. If there was any way I could say the two cheetahs were arguing, then we had a seder. I was very excited, and he would be on the contrary. No, they're really not arguing. All right, two different approaches to learning. But certainly, even someone with my perspective, you have to be intellectually honest. And sometimes you have to ask yourself, am I reading too much into the text? So one way to serve as a control, and this is why, among other reasons, the Rambam is such a useful tool, is that you can compare or contrast, you can check parallel texts to see how something was dealt with. Right? That's, again, that would be a scholarly tool that might be useful probably in other fields as well. Other types of literature even. You compare similar texts, and when you have a similarity overall, then whatever nuance, if there are differences, those become much more significant. So if you look just very briefly at the next source I have for you, is the Rambam when he's talking about Kiddush. And the Rambam, when he's talking about Kiddush, here he does go out of his way. Everything else is more or less the same. You'll trust me, if you want to look it up inside, you can. How the cup has to have at least the revius. And then he adds here, Vishose Milo Lugmov. When it comes to the every week Kiddush, the Rambam says, you just have to drink, minimally, the cheekful. So, if the Rambam goes out of his way to use that, it's not like the Rambam was unacquainted with that phrase. He goes out of his way to use that in Hilchos Kiddush, but the Rambam does not use it in Hilchos Dalet Kosos. Presumably, we were not reading too much into it, and in fact, he doesn't believe that it's true. According to the Rambam, there's a stricter standard for the Dalet Kosos. You have to drink a majority of the cup, even if it turns out to be more than a cheekful. Different than Shabbos.
Because that's
okay, that's a possibility. You are going to be mechaven to very similar to the Tshuva Sisoros Tshuva, what he says about the first machlokas. So it's a very good ha'ara, very good possibility. So that we have, just to sum up, we saw two different debates. And again, it's important that we remember that we have the same protagonists in both. Right? These are like our two of our all-time heavy hitters. We have Tosfos and the Rambam. One debate is it sufficient for one person to have a cup or four cups? And if they drink and make the brachos, they could be motzi everyone else at the table, just like that happens all year round at Kiddush. Tosfos says it's okay. After all, Kiddush. The Rambam seems to deny that. And then we have a second debate. Tosfos says, all you have to do is drink a malo lugmav, the majority of your cheek. That'll be sufficient. Whereas the Rambam says, apparently, and the truth is that they point out, if you look in the Beis Yosef, the Ramban says this explicitly. This is, again, a known chumrah. Some people are worried about this at the Seder night. That no matter how big the cup is, you have to have rov kos. Where does that come from? There's no concept like that in any other area of halacha. There's Ramban in the Beis Yosef, and it also would appear to be this Rambam. So you put the Ramban and the Rambam together, if you're going to be machmir, those are the people to be machmir for.
It's obvious there's a difference between Kiddush, Shabbos, and Pesach, because there's no mitzvah on Shabbos that you have to go to the
Gabbai Stoker to make Kiddush. So that's a good point. But then, of course, that just begs the question, how do we understand Tosfos? Right, so you, I'm not surprised, Seymour, you are a Rambam man. But Tosfos is Eichet a good yid. We have to worry about Tosfos as well. So the one who really was the trailblazer on this topic, and really was the one who perhaps first connected all of these dots, was Rav Velvel Soloveitchik. No, that's Rav Chaim's second son, known as the Brisker Rav, both when he was in Europe and then when he came and set up shop after the war in Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. And he has a sefer, a thin sefer, on the Rambam, known as Chiddush Maran Riz Halevi, or the Griz. That's his actual Hebrew given name, was Rav Yitzchak Zev. The Yiddish nickname for Zev was Velvel, so he was known as Rav Velvela. So he has a very significant piece. He actually has two pieces back-to-back on Dalet Kosos, although the first one is really about leaning. That's in Perek Zayin, Halacha Zayin, Chavon Tamatzah, and then he has this piece, Zayin Tess. Two of the significant pieces of Torah that one needs to know for a Brisker Pesach. So he, and this is a long piece, and even when I was summing it up, you see it's still a big source turning over to the back of your page. He is the one who puts this all together. And as a good son and student does, he first starts off with something he heard from his father, the great Reb Chaim Brisker, that's who Rabbi Hopfer mentioned before, and then he adds on to himself. So if you look at the beginning of the source, he starts off by quoting what we began with. That Tosfos says, Kiddush and Pesach, it's all the same thing. One person can be motzi, everybody else. Ukvar shamati, Adoni Avi, Mori v'Rabbeinu, Mori v'Rabbi, Hagon, that's all. I heard from my father, my master, my teacher. Shetamal de Tosfos, Ela like Seymour. How could you compare Shabbos and Dalet Kosos? The my Indian Kosos, Kiddush to Kol Hashanah. There's no comparison. To Hasam HaMitzvah Hi Abracha. Right? We, for those who were davening with us on Friday night, we focused on this a few weeks ago. That the Midaraisa, the Mitzvah of Kiddush, the Rambam says this, and most Rishonim hold this way, is Bitvarim. To make it more elegant, it's like a toast. It's more elegant, so we say the words of Kiddush by holding a cup of wine. But the real essential mitzvah of Kiddush is with the words that we say. That's the mitzvah. Yes, exactly. That's why you can have a concept of it even on Yom Kippur, right? It's Zechira B'Dvarim. Right? There's a Rashi that says no, but most Rishonim hold that the essential mitzvah of Kiddush is B'Dvarim, and it's only an ancillary component that you do it on wine to make it a little bit more elegant, like a toast. V'zeo Ikra Kiddush. The whole essence of the mitzvah is what you say. U'b'zeh ha'vidina d'shomea ka'ona. We have this concept that's like a halachic hocus pocus, that one person can say something, and if I'm listening with intent to fulfill, it's as if I said it, right? How many people here read the Megillah themselves, this Purim? We came to shul, and we heard someone else read the Megillah. But we were listening, and we had in mind to fulfill our mitzvah through their reading. That's what we do with Kiddush. How many people make their own Kiddush every Shabbos? You hear from somebody else to make it, that's just as good. However, Ba'arba Kosos, I'm on the third line. Halo Ikra Mitzvah Hiyashtiya, Shaladal Kosos. Umay Shayach Lahotzi Bazeh. The essential mitzvah, Reb Chaim assumed the prima facie of the four cups, is you have to drink four cups. That's not comparable. If the mitzvah is to drink four cups, no one else can drink for me. Right? Listen, let me tell you, I think it's not a secret anymore. I'm not a morning person. The best thing that could ever have happened to me if someone could say that you could appoint a shaliach to put on tefillin for you every morning. I would have been in heaven if such a mitzvah would be possible. The answer is he can't do it. Things which you actually have to do, physical, tangible things which you have to do, no one can do for you. Says Reb Chaim, you got to drink the cups. How could Tosfos equate this with Kiddush? Kiddush is a verbal mitzvah. So verbal mitzvahs, that's where we have this special halacha that someone could do it for you. But Dalet Kosos, you have to drink. How could one person drink? You have 10 people around the table. You're only going to give, Marvin's going to be stingy, he's only going to give Dalet Kosos for the father? What about everybody else? How can they fulfill with his drinking? So what does Reb Chaim say? He says, you see from here, I'm reading out the underlined part, Hochiach mizeh, the sfirlei letosfos, the gam ba'arba kosos, ain't ikra mitzvah b'shtiyas ha-kosos, rak b'ha-brochos, sha'al ha-kosos, b'ha-li mamish, dugmas kiddush, the kol ha-shana, v'chol kosos shal-brocha. Says Reb Chaim, you see from this an unbelievable kiddush. Says Reb Chaim, what I assumed was wrong. I assumed the kiddush and the dalet kosos were different. But you see that Tosfos holds, and again, just we just want to formulate it precisely. The way he puts it is, really, 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 dalet kosos and kiddush are all the same. What is so ingenious and novel by that comparison is that what that means is that even dalet kosos, the primary mitzvah is the bracha that we make. Not necessarily the bar pri agafen, but that section of the Haggadah that we make, bracha of asher galanu, etc., the halel, the benching, the kiddush, the magid, that part of the Haggadah that we make, that we say, that's the essential mitzvah. And to cap it off, to make it elegant, to make it cheres, even if you want to put it that way, we drink. But the essential thing is what we say. If that's the case, it's essentially the same thing as kiddush. And if one person can make kiddush for other people, so too one person can have the four cups for other people. Ulam, he says, hold on. That's nice, it's ingenious, it's razzle-dazzle, but that is subject to a major debate. And here is where, like a great student, he doesn't just know what his father said, but he builds on it, and he adds another layer to the edifice. Says Rav Elbel, there's a broader second debate. What's the second debate? The issue that we mentioned second as well. How much do you have to drink? And here I'll paraphrase, but if you want, you could look at it inside, turning over to the second page, where he then shows that there's this machlokes. How much do you have to drink? Just a cheekful? But the Rambam says a much greater amount, majority of the cup, no matter how big it is. So I'm at the underlined part on the back side of the page. So he explains how come the Rambam and its others, who the Ramban I mentioned to you, have this much more strict opinion, you have to drink a majority cup. True, when it comes to Kiddush or other types of things, where the essence is what you say, and just it happens to be that you drink. In order that you have this significance, someone has to taste the wine or grape juice. So the halacha is, the what counts as a taste? So we formalized it. What's a taste? A cheekful. But that's it. Because all we're doing is making sure that there was wine drank, but the essence, the ikkar, is everything else. Aval gabe arba kosos, the mitzvah he shtiyas hakos, al kein tzarech, ar karcha tzarech lishtoso, kulo dafka. Ruba sage mishim de ruba kakula. Aval shura de male lugma, velo shayach hacha klal. Zehu ashira nemar bedin t'ima, velo hacha de ve'inan shtiyas hakos. Says it's beautiful. All of this is nice, but it was all only true, right? We have to be more pluralistic. That was only true according to one approach. Tosfos. The Rambam holds, as Reb Chaim unsurprisingly originally assumed, that the essence of the Dalet Kosos is to drink the cups. And if the essence is to drink the cups, then really, 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 we should actually have to drink the whole cup. We'll be in big trouble by the time we get to the third or the fourth cup. You have to drink everything. Just happens to be that we have a halacha in other areas as well. Ruba kakula, majority is as if you've done the whole thing. So according to even this opinion, no one says you have to drink an entire cup. Nobody. But the machmirim, the strict ones, will say most of the cup is like you drank the whole thing. We'll give you the break. Why? Because the whole essence of the mitzvah according to the Rambam is drinking the cups. Tosfos had said that the real essence of the mitzvah is no different than Kiddush all year round. That's the words that you say. And if the essence is the words that you say, then we just need to have a little bit of a taste in order to give it the context and the significance of being al hakos. And for that, a cheek fill is enough. So ada sina lahachi, now that we have explained the second machlokes of how much, we can go back and understand the first machlokes even easier now. What was the first machlokes? Is it sufficient for Marvin to give out enough just for one person? Or do you have to have everyone at the table drinking the cups? Tosfos said it, only one person. No different than Shabbos. And the Rambam, it would appear, holds that everyone has to drink. Now it works out beautifully. Both of those positions are consistent with their respective larger perspectives on the four cups. Tosfos tells us, and sometimes you just have to listen to what people are telling you to know what they think. Tosfos tells us, black on white, that he equates the four cups with Kiddush. So what does that mean? So we're just digging a little bit below the surface. We're getting to the root. By equating them, that means that the essence of both, even the Dalet Kosos at the Seder, are what you say, the Dvarim. And if the essence is what you say, so then that opens it up for the possibility. Again, it's not ideal, but it opens up for the possibility in a case of great need for only one person at the table to have the cups and to say the words and people to fulfill the mitzvah through them. How could it be? The answer is it's no different than what you do every Shabbos. Right? In our shul, the minhag is when there's a kiddush, I'm making kiddush from the pulpit for hundreds of people. I hope you're listening. How's it also to eat? But that's good, because if you were listening, it's good. So if it could work for hundreds of people on a regular Shabbos, It can work for the people around your table on a Pesach Seder. That's Tosfos. But there's an entirely different perspective. It's the Rambam. He doesn't just argue on a detail. He argues on the whole conception. Says the Rambam, the essence of the mitzvah is nothing to do with Kiddush. Kiddush is just the words. The four cups is to drink. And if it means to drink, that's why I have to drink a larger amount. I have to drink most of the cup. And it's also why the father could be a wonderful person and he could have all of the kavanas in mind. My wife and all my children and my in-laws even. And my parents. Everyone in mind. It's all true. It's all there. It's all sincere. And it would all work the next morning at lunch. But it doesn't work, says the Rambam, at night for the Dalet Kosos. Because the essence is to drink the kos. It's a very physical activity. You can't do that for anybody else. That's why the Rambam holds that the cup has to be, you have to drink more, and it also has to be that everyone drinks. Because he fundamentally rejects everything in Tosfos. Now, I just want to point out, Al Derech, what Rabbi Kowalski said, there is perhaps a more prosaic or less razzle-dazzle way of explaining. And while even though this is only half of it, and perhaps if we add this half to Rabbi Kowalski, we could just have a different kind of a machlokas. But there is a sefer called the Tshuvas Hisorus Tshuva. I've mentioned him in shul once or twice before. I don't exactly know how he's related, but he's part of the Sofer Eger dynasty, right? Let now have the Salvechiks have all the fame. There's other big families. So this is somehow a descendant of the Chasam Sofer and Bikiva Eger, which, as you know, there was a father-in-law and a son-in-law. This Oris Tshuva has a tshuva where he says, don't give me any of this razzle-dazzle stuff. You want to know why Tosfos thinks it's enough for just one person to have a cup and everyone else to be Yotze through him? He says, I'll ask you a better question. Why are we so strict? This family is so poor, they can't afford it. And why don't we just give them the exemption we would give them for any other mitzvah? Without getting into all the details, but what he says and many other posts can explain is because there's something unique about the mitzvah of four cups. It's not just a mitzvah, but as you know, it's something called Persume Nisa. We're publicizing the miracle, right? The four cups are associated with the four terms that are mentioned in the Chumash of redemption, the four Lashonos of Geula. Each cup highlights the net aspect of the redemption. We're publicizing the miracle through the four cups. So that's why we're so strict. That's not a sufficient explanation, but it'll have to suffice for today.
Would that be like Mahadran and a Mahadran for Hanukkah candles where everybody would light their own?
Maybe. Says the Hesorus Tshuva, as long as one person at the table has the cups, then you have the Persume Nisa. Everyone will see. Why do you have a cup? Vosalti, Ritalti, Lakachti. Ooh, four Lashonos of Gula. What's accomplished with one cup is sufficient. You've publicized the miracle. Everyone else wants to drink. Okay, halavai, next year they'll be able to afford it. But you have the exemption of that you can't afford it. That's a legitimate exemption. We have that exemption in every other area of Torah. Why we're so machmeh here is to publicize the miracle. But here, as long as one person has it, we have publicized the miracle. So perhaps that's a different explanation than we just suggested for that debate. Perhaps we could tweak that a little bit and even apply that to the second debate in terms of how much too. Perhaps.
What happened to the Rambam?
He doesn't know. This is only according to Tosfos and Hanami. The Rambam rejects that, obviously. Even according to him, apparently the Rambam feels that everyone has to have it. It's an obligation on everyone to have Persume Nisa.
But you have it as Matzah?
That's not Persume Nisa. No, the Dalet Kosos have a specific element of Persume Nisa. Yeah, no, there's no question, this everyone agrees, there's a unique focus on Persume Nisa at the Seder that there is not. The four cups, it's not just Kiddush and Echanami. Arba Shalosh Shal Geula, exactly. Now I want to just close by mentioning one more topic, which is an important topic, which we all take for granted, but don't always appreciate the significance of. That is that, you're familiar, again, this is a problem for those who have difficulty also walking and chewing gum, that you're supposed to be leaning while you drink. I once thought that was the reason for the kittel, for those who have such a minig, so you don't ruin your suit and tie. My kittel is full of grape juice stains. That's not from Yom Kippur, I'll be honest, okay? It's from Seder night. But you're supposed to lean. Now, why do we lean? This is a very interesting thing. I'm not sure if people know this. Even though it's very clear and straightforward in the Gemara about matzah, other things maybe that you have to lean, the four cups is not so simple. If you look at the next source here, it's another Gemara. The Gemara asks, do you have to lean yayin? Do you have to lean for the four cups or not? The Gemara here says something very interesting. It's almost embarrassing. We don't know. Itmar Meshmeder of Nachman, Sarachaseba, Itmar Meshmeder of Nachman, Ein Sarachaseba. We got a real problem. We have two conflicting traditions, and it's not just that it's a debate. Both traditions are in the name of the same scholar. Some people claim that Rav Nachman said you have to lean for all four cups, and other tradition says that Rav Nachman said pum fakert. You don't have to lean for any of the cups. I give out. We don't know what to do. So the Gemara says, don't worry, it's not really a debate. He was not schizophrenic, Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman was distinguishing between the first two cups as a unit and the second two cups as a unit. Well, we're still not all the way there. Which cups have to lean? Which cups don't have to lean? Says the Gemara, that we don't know. So let's think about it. Let's make a rational argument. Says the Gemara, we have another problem. You can make a very persuasive argument for both units of cups. After all, says the Gemara, when it comes to the first two cups, hashtahu deka mitchala lacheres. That's right. In the movie, that's when the music starts, the drum beat. That's when the whole story is happening. That's when the whole process of redemption is beginning. Right, we start off, right? Bignai, right? We start off with the bad stuff. But now, the first two cups, we're getting into the redemption. It's happening. So for that, we should be leaning to show how free we are. By the end of the Seder, we're tired. And it already happened already. Now we're free. Right? Once you've been free, right? Rich people don't have to show how rich they are. We're already free. We have to show how free we are. We're already free. It happened already, says the Gemara. Really, we should be leaning toward the action. When we're going from slaves to free people, that's when we should lean. But the Gemara says, that's persuasive, but I'll give you a different argument. You can't do that. After all, the other argument says, no, on the contrary. Adarabba. Trei ka'asi basrai bo yaseb. We should lean at the last two cups. Aisha adar de kahavicherus. Come, a slave leaning, what's that? That's insignificant. At the end of the Seder, that's when we're taka free. We just had a big meal. We've seen how wealthy and comfortable we are. That's when we should lean. But the first two cups, how are we going to lean at the same point in the Seder where we're still saying the words, Avadim Hayinu, Lafar B'Mitzrayim, Arami Ovid Avi? I mean, it's all persecution at the beginning of the story. That's what we're leaning for? Right? So you'll spend an hour going back and forth and back and forth. Says the Gemara, we just don't know how to resolve this. Gemara therefore concludes, underlying part, Hash to the Imar Hachi, Imar Hachi, you give me two good arguments, both sides. Aidi va Aidi, ba'u haseba. Both! Why pick? Lean for the first cup, lean for the second cup, lean for the third cup, and if you're still awake, lean for the first cup. Yes?
Why couldn't you do like they have in the Zman Tefillah? Either you hold like Rabbi Yehuda, or you hold like the Chacham, and either do the first two or the second.
Right.
But be consistent.
Good. That's a good question. There's a better question. Very difficult, Gemara. What's the better question? We're not sure what to do. I've got a secret for you. This is not the first time in halacha. It's not going to be the last time. Often we're not sure what to do. Fortunate are we that in our system, we have rules built in for what to do when we're not sure. One of the classic, famous rules is that if the whole mitzvah in question, how high are the stakes? If the whole mitzvah in question is only rabbinic, nothing against the rabbis, but that's not from the Torah. It's a lower level. And if it's from rabbinic origins, and we're in doubt, we have a right to be lenient on those questions. This is a principle of halachic jurisprudence, which is applied daily by rabbanon. Safek to rabbanon, lekula. When you're not sure what to do, if it's rabbinic, you can be lenient, safek to araisa, but if it's a Torah obligation, you have to be strict. Comes along Rabbeinu Nisim of Gerona, one of the great Spanish medieval Rishonim. Two sources from the bottom of the page. And he asks, I don't understand. Afagal de ba'alma kaimalan ibcha. The chal sveka de rabbanan lekula. Right, people think now it's all chumras, it's all chumras. Said the Ran, shift to the right. Chumras, what's going on? We should be lenient. How could it be? Right, we lean to the left. That's a good point. Okay, I'm sure someone has given a drasha about that already. I won't, but I'm sure someone has. Bend but don't break. Okay. So the Ran has two answers to this question. What's the anomaly of the Dalet Kosos? Why are we so strict? First answer, he says, is very, very simple. He says, listen, when do we look to be lenient in a case of doubt? When what we're being asked maybe is only rabbinic, but it could be very demanding. Sometimes you have a question on Shabbos, there's a great need, whether it's for health reasons or other types of situations, and in order to solve that problem, you have to violate Shabbos. So very often, if it's only a rabbinic issue, we have a right to be lenient, because to be strict would be of severe consequence. We're only lenient, though, when we're getting out of something that's very difficult for us. But says the Ran, come on, Gottlieb notwithstanding, what's the big deal about leaning? It's not a milsa de tircha, it's not a hard thing. Why be lenient? Again, this is the mentality that he says. Why be lenient? It's not a hard thing. Why not be machmir? What's the big deal? You'll just lean a little bit and you drink the four cups. We only say the principle of when in doubt, do without, if it's something that is involved. But if it's so easy, what's the big deal? Right? This is my mother used to say to me all the time. No matter what she asked me to do, to me it was too big of a deal. It was a big mitzvah of the tircha. She said, what's the big deal? Just do it. That's what the Ran says. First answer. But the second answer is the one I want to focus on. Very fascinating. Says the Ran, bottom line, v'i nekil b'tarvayu, me'ikra mitzvah saseba lagamri. Says, when do we say Suffik Drabanan Lakula? When we are going to be lenient in a particular example, in a particular aspect of a question. But in this case, if we were to say what the Ran wants us to say, we don't know which two cups to lean, so don't lean at all, give out. Then what happened to the mitzvah of Heseba, of leaning? We will have totally uprooted and negated the whole concept. And we know one thing for sure from the Gemara, you're supposed to lean sometime. So you can't use the principle, right? You can be two mekel. You can't use the principle of Safek Darabana Lakula to get out of leaning altogether. That's not what Darabana Lakula means. To only lean now, this, that, okay. But to not lean at all, that we don't say. We don't uproot and cancel an entire mitzvah based on this principle. Does everyone understand that? It's very important. Okay. So that's the Ran. He gives us two shots at it. So look at the next source. Right? We're 30 days before Pesach and one day after Purim. So I needed to connect the two. So if you look at the Mishnah Lamelech, it was a commentary on the Rambam. The Mishnah Lamelech, you'll note here, this is in Hilchos Megillah. Right? This is the Kilayim Rabbi Hapfer was talking about. Purim and Pesach. Says the Mishnah Lamelech, not only do we have another similar situation in Purim, once again, it's the Ran, the same authority, Rabbeinu Nisim, who played a critical role. What was the question there? You're familiar that there's really two different days of Purim. Most of the world celebrates Purim on the 14th of Adar. And those that were walled cities from the time of Yehoshua, they celebrated Purim on the 15th of Adar. The problem, which was already addressed in the time of the Talmud, is that apparently there was a time in history where it was a very common thing to have walled cities. More than that, they were far away, but they certainly were a lot closer to the times of Yehoshua. And apparently in Yehoshua's time, it was certainly more common even to have walled cities. What, if a city does not have a wall now, that's okay. It was walled at the time of Yehoshua. That's the critical point. What if you're not sure? Yerushalayim, others, right? There we know. But some cities we don't know. Had anyone ever spent Purim in Ashkelon? I think Ashdod even. Akko. There's a few cities. Well, we're not sure, says the Gemara. Were they walled? Were they not walled? So what do you do? So there's different suggestions. One opinion is that they read on the 14th, like everybody else, and they don't read on the 15th. Only if you know for sure do you read on the 15th. Whose opinion of all people is that? Rabbeinu Nissim. Look at the Mishnah Lamelech. He quotes this from the Ran. Well, Inyan Ayaros, Hamasupokos, Imhe Mukofos, Choma, Mimosheshua, Benun Olo. A city, we're not sure if it was walled or not. So, the Ran had made a few different arguments about what the odds are. But then the Ran had said, and even if you'll tell me it's 50-50, just as strong odds that it was walled or it wasn't walled. Doesn't matter, second line, Havale Savak Shal Devrayim Ulakula. Says the Ran, you should be lenient. But then the Ran, right, he's not schizophrenic. He's thinking the exact same thing he was thinking in Pesachim. To be lenient here should mean you don't read at all. I don't know if I should read on the 14th, so then I won't read on the 14th. I don't know if I should read on the 15th, so I'll read on the 15th. Uh-oh. Nimsa, potro b'shneim u'batul mimeno, b'vade mikra Megillah. That would mean if you live in these cities, you wouldn't read the Megillah at all. Afichach, kore b'rishon u'potro b'sheni. So the Ram says, since we're in that quandary, no, we say just read it on the 14th, not the 15th. If I was just learning Hilchos Megillah with you, you might like that answer, you might like that argument, you might not. Certainly very reasonable, nothing extremely problematic about saying that. The Mishnah Melech is the one who realized that there's a big problem with the Ran. Ostensibly, the two questions are identical. Whether the city was walled or not, what day do you read the Megillah on the one hand? Do you lean or not on the other hand? Both cases, we're not sure what to do. Both are rabbinic. At first blush, we would say be totally lenient, but that would wipe out the mitzvah entirely. Everything now we're taking, each step we took so far now was identical. The last possible minute, when it came time to tell us what to do, the Ran made a sharp left in one case and a sharp right in the other. When it came to leaning, he said, that's why we say, you're not sure what to do, lean for everything. And when it came to the Megillah, he says, you're not sure what to do, read just on the 14th. Why didn't he say in Megillah, read on the 14th and the 15th? Or in the other direction, why didn't he say, when it came to the four cups, just lean on the first two? You're not sure what to do, just do the first thing that comes to you. That's the first two cups. Yes? So read it without a bracha. Depends who reads. Depends who reads. Depends who reads. I could listen to Aya Guttenberg 20 times. Yes? Okay. Don't, let's not bring that up. Yes?
It's almost schizophrenic. Are you saying it was a walled city or it wasn't a walled city? You're not delineating clearly. You're reading the Gill on both days. You're not saying exactly when you're...
Why? I would say I'm saying I'm not sure. Better safe than sorry. What should you do? Okay, if I'm not mistaken, I think the Ran's possibility was to read both days with a bracha. It's easy to say read a second day without a bracha. That's the easy thing. The question is, would you even say read both days with a bracha? I understand. So there's a number of answers to this question. If you want extra Mar Makomos, like you can give you other sources, an Avnei Nezer, an Amek Bracha, other sources. But I just want to share with you, we'll conclude with this, the Mishnah Lamelech's question. His answer, this is the underlined part. What's the doubt? This is Rabbi Rosenzweig, who teaches this all the time. When it comes to Sfeikos, 99% of the solution is how you formulate the question. This is one of the most confusing areas of halacha, not surprising, it's about Sfeikos. Different shittas, how do you resolve this kind of doubt, that kind of doubt, and you say all the time, very often the resolution is in how you choose to formulate the question. Says the Mishnah Lamelech, it all depends here, how do you formulate, what's the doubt? In our case, ours is now being Pesach, we're on the pre-Pesach mode already now. The doubt is, what was the original intended rabbinic takana. What was the rule? That we're not sure about. And if we would have employed the principle of, when in doubt, do without, we would have uprooted an entire rabbinic principle. And if you'll tell me no, maybe you just lean on the first two cups. You can't just lean the first two, because maybe you're wrong. Maybe the rabbinic halacha was to lean the second two. And if you just lean the first two, and it was really that you're supposed to lean the second two, you did nothing. And if you just lean the second two, but really you were supposed to lean the first two, again, all you did was stretch. You did nothing of religious significance. So we're in a bind. And in order to avoid completely uprooting the mitzvah, therefore that's why we have to lean for both. But that's not the same type of doubt as the case of the walled cities. Avagabe Megillah, the Kakanas Chachamim Bimkoma Amedes. We know what the rule was when it came to Megillah. The question isn't what was the rule. The rule was walled cities on the 15th, non-walled cities on the 14th. Elad Yesh Ktsas Ayaros, Shemusupakos Be'ezium Yikru. Just that there are a handful of cities where they don't know which Metzias, what reality were they. Right? We don't have anybody we could ask. So, what was it? Was it walled or not? Nobody knows. On the one hand, it's true, the Ran says, we can't exempt you from reading at all, because then we have completely been mevatel a mitzvah derabanan. Mikamakom hecha de karba yedalid, mahane taima de savak shal debrayim lefotro mikriya v'tesvav. In that case, then you can say, we're not sure, we'll read on the 14th, because we have a right to assume like we're part of the majority. If most cities are not walled, so there we're not sure which one we are. So we'll read on the 14th. It's not a question, again, there's really two, if you read it carefully, he's saying there's two different things really. One is it depends on what is the safek, is it in the takana, or is it in the metzias? And the second thing he's saying is, does this affect a few handful of people, or the whole Jewish people? If the Gemara had said, since we're not sure about leaning, therefore don't, then no Jew ever, anywhere, would have leaned for the four cups. We would have completely written it out of the book. That we can't say. But that's not what we'd be saying in the case of the Megillah. Because after all, it's a handful of situations, and the case is different anyway. And therefore, we don't have to feel such paralysis. When it came to the four cups, we were mamish paralyzed, we couldn't pick. Here, because of the nature of the doubt, we can more comfortably pick. It's more similar to most cases when we're not sure, so we take a compromised position. The problem with the four cups and leaning was that there was no compromise to be had. We were, so to speak, caught neither here nor there, and therefore we had to go for everything. So we've just, again, just to review in a minute, we saw three basic halachic issues which were really divided up into two. In this case, again, there's so many more things to talk about for the four cups. Number one was, is it possible for one person to have the four cups and to be mostly everyone else at his house? That's one machlokes. Second question was, how much do you have to drink? This is a very important lamaisa for all of us. Just enough to drink a cheekful, or do you have to even drink most of your cup, no matter how big the cup is? We presented two different understandings of those two debates. And finally, we saw the question of what is the rationale behind our practice to lean for all four of the Dalet Kosos? After all, if it's a doubt in the Gemara, shouldn't we have been lenient considering its rabbinic origins? And we explained why this is a unique case where we had to be machmir, even though it's rabbinic, despite the fact that the Ran himself, and it would appear to be almost identical case in Purim, he felt that one would have a right to be lenient. Everyone in the schus of the Talmud Torah Barabim this morning should have a wonderful day, and should also have a wonderful Lamed Yom Kodem Lechag.
So what does the Gabbai Tzedakah do? Does he give for the 10 bottles?